I know it's not our custom to make announcements from the pulpit, but there are a couple of matters I want to emphasize this morning. First, one of the great traditions of University Congregational Church is our involvement with the community in schools Adopt a Family program. This program provides gifts ranging from toys to clothes to Dillon's dollars for local families living in poverty. This year, our congregation has adopted 5 local families living in serious poverty, including one family that is homeless. For all the factors that lead people to this level of hopelessness, the one certainty is that the children are purely innocent victims in all this. So I hope you'll all go to Fellowship Hall after the service and consider selecting a gift for one of these families from the Adopt a Family Christmas tree. And while you're there, you will see a table near the Adopt a Family tree that has information regarding the upcoming fellowship dinners. If you don't sign up for these dinners, I really believe you will regret it, because they will be the primary topic of conversation among church members for the next several months. There are flyers in Fellowship Hall that will fully inform you about these dinners. Briefly, fellowship dinners consist of 6 to 8 people gathering for an informal meal at somebody's home. Each month, over a 4-month period, you meet with 6 to 8 new people. I really hope you'll sign up. There's no better way to make friends, to find people with common interests, and to become a more tight-knit church community than attending just a couple of these dinners. The conversation at these dinners will be wonderful, and I think it's safe to say the Gospel of John will not be a common topic of discussion. This morning, however, I want to begin the sermon by reading from today's lectionary text, which is from the Gospel of John. It involves that famous scene between Pilate and Jesus. Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replied, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate asked him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who believes the truth listens to my voice." Pilate asked him, "What is truth?" The first and most obvious question for me regarding this text is, why does the lectionary schedule it to be studied this week? I mean, here we are, ready to start the holiday season, and this sounds like a Good Friday text to me. Why isn't this meeting between Pilate and Jesus, which leads to Jesus' death, studied in the week leading up to Easter? That would make sense. And the answer is this: today is the last Sunday of the year, of the church year. For those who follow the 6 seasons of the church year, Advent, Christmas, Epiphany, Lent, Easter, and Pentecost, this is the last Sunday of Pentecost, the end of the church year. Next Sunday is the first Sunday of Advent, the season of preparation in which the world anticipates the coming of Jesus into the world. As you are probably all aware, we Congregationalists tend not to get too obsessed with the church year. We acknowledge it and sometimes study it, but we certainly don't allow ourselves to be enslaved by it. But understanding that this is the last Sunday of the church year helps us to understand why this particular Bible passage is suggested for study on this day. This scene from the Gospels is when the fate of the earthly life of Jesus of Nazareth was sealed. And as we will see when we look a bit closer at this passage, three very important points are made about Jesus. Points important enough that the worldwide church evidently believes they serve as an appropriate message for the culmination of the church year, as an exclamation point to the entire gospel story. Before we look at those points, let's pan back and get an overview of what is going on here in John's gospel. The most significant shift in Bible scholarship over the past couple of decades has been a move toward what scholars call story theology. Story theology is important for a couple of reasons. First, it acknowledges that the Bible is comprised, in large part, of stories. Some of the stories are grounded in historical fact. For example, when King Solomon died, the nation of Israel was divided into two kingdoms, Judah in the south and Israel in the north. There were two tribes that comprised the southern kingdom of Judah, the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. The other 10 tribes broke away and formed their own kingdom called Israel in the north. This is a great story, made even greater perhaps by the fact that it is true. It really happened. It's historical fact. And you can read that story by reading 1 Kings chapters 11 through 14. Compare that with one of my favorite stories in the Bible, the story of Jonah, who tried to run away from God and wound up in the belly of a great fish. This story reveals great truths about what happens when we refuse to go along with God's will and try to run away from God. It contains a great and important truth that no matter what a person has done to become alienated from God, God's forgiveness is always waiting for the person with a repentant heart. Even if that person has so removed himself from God, it is as if he were in the belly of a fish at the bottom of the sea. And this story is made great by those truths, even though most of us would agree that it certainly did not happen in any historical sense. I'm no expert on the digestive enzymes in the belly of a fish, but my assumption is Jonah would have been looking pretty bad after 2 or 3 hours, let alone after 3 days. So we have different types of stories in the Bible. We have historical stories and we have mythical stories. They're both important. But what has changed over the past few decades in the eyes of Bible scholars is this. They recognize that each story should be viewed as a story. Great truths can be revealed if you just read the story like a story. To understand what a shift in thinking this is, you have to understand the nature of Bible scholarship over the past 2 centuries. Bible scholarship has been based on what is called historical critical research. I'm a big fan of historical critical Bible scholarship. This is the scholarship that insists we must not read the Bible like it magically appeared in the world and is the perfect handwriting of God. We must look at the Bible page by page, sentence by sentence, word by word, even letter by letter, and attempt to come to an informed and intelligent opinion regarding what the Bible is all about. This is done by asking questions and honestly searching for the truth. Some of the questions are, how has the text been changed over the years as different people hand-copied the manuscripts? What's the setting of the text? When? Where did it take place? And who wrote the text in the first place? What was the viewpoint and theology of the person who first put a particular passage in writing? Beyond this, each text is studied from grammatical, literary, structural, and canonical angles, among others. This is all well and good, And scholars today do not want to abandon any of the historical critical perspectives that have been developed over the past few centuries. But what they now realize is that we sometimes deconstruct these stories to the point they end up in a pile of fragmented rubble. We lose sight of the story itself that the writer was attempting to tell. And so today, the big movement in Bible scholarship is toward story theology, which asks these questions. Who is the narrator, the storyteller? Is the narrator writing in first person, second person, or third person? Is the narrator omniscient, all-knowing? That is, does the narrator know what people are thinking and what is going to happen in the future? What's the plot of the story? How is the plot developed? Does the narrator use irony, symbolism? And very importantly, who are the characters in the story, and how does the storyteller develop those characters? In other words, with story theology, you treat the story like a story. This is especially valuable when studying the four Gospels, because they were each written by very different types of storytellers, and they develop their characters differently. We receive very different versions of Jesus and of the disciples from gospel to gospel. One of the most interesting things that has become evident with story theology is that each gospel reads like a stage play and can easily be divided into acts and scenes. Today's text, the dialogue between Jesus and Pilate, is located in the final act of the Gospel of John. The final act is arranged into a series of scenes. And if you really want to narrow it down, this dialogue is scene 2 of the 7-scene trial of Jesus before Pilate. Now, there's a reason I'm breaking the story down like this, because when we study the four Gospels, we see that each Gospel contains this exact scene. As different as they are, they each contain this scene. So even with their great differences, the writers of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all agree that this scene is critically important to the Gospel story. But consider how John's scene differs from the other three Gospels. All four writers agree that Pilate asks Jesus, "Are you a king?" This is really important because claiming to be a king would ensure death. The Roman Emperor Tiberius had no tolerance for mischief of any kind, let alone somebody usurping his majestic title. When asked if he is a king, Matthew, Mark, and Luke report Jesus as giving some version of the answer, "You say so," or "You say I am." In those three Gospels, Jesus in no way claims to be a king. But in John's Gospel, Jesus does not deny he is a king. In fact, he proceeds to start talking about his kingdom. So who is correct? What did the conversation between Pilate and Jesus really sound like? Well, think about it. The two men were alone when this conversation occurred. Pilate himself left no record of the conversation, and all four Gospels agree that Jesus spoke to no one from the time he had this conversation with Pilate until he died, with the exception of his words from the cross. The fact is, the conversation between Pilate and Jesus obviously is lost to history. However, that does not mean we should just toss out this scene from the Gospel of John. This is the writing of one of the most inspired human beings who has ever walked the face of the earth. A storyteller writing in the third person omniscient view, who sets down on paper his heartfelt thoughts about the final words of Jesus. And he makes three points, points that are, as I said earlier, important enough to the organizers of the modern lectionary, that these three points serve as the final word for the church year. These are the three points the Gospel of John reports Jesus makes in the presence of Pilate. First, the kingdom Jesus is talking about is not of this world. What does that mean? Some interpret that to mean Jesus' kingdom is in heaven, that it physically exists somewhere else, but not here on planet Earth. Serious students of the Gospel of John would argue with that interpretation. There may well be a future kingdom of glory, and all indications are that John believed in that future kingdom. But John also took quite seriously the words of Jesus, which say, "The kingdom of God is among you." The kingdom of God is an eternal reality that transcends the limits of the material world, but it is also right here, right now. The kingdom of God is among you. The Gospel of Thomas, which was discovered by archaeologists in 1945 and has a theology similar to that of the Gospel of John, claims Jesus said it this way: "The kingdom of God is spread upon the earth, but people do not see it." Think again about what Jesus says in John's gospel. He says his kingdom is not of the world. Some translate it, "My kingdom is not from this world." And this goes to the heart of the theological idea that the kingdom of God is in the world, but not of the world. We need to make that distinction between the two ways Christians think about the word world. In one instance, world means the planet Earth, God's glorious creation. But the way John is using the word in this passage means worldly, the world of selfishness, greed, warfare, and the battle for worldly power. And when Jesus says to Pilate, "My kingdom is not of this world," what he is saying is, the kingdom of God is spiritual, not political. The kingdom of God exists right here on planet Earth, not as a political power, but as a spiritual reality, which both encompasses and transcends the physical world we live in. After Jesus makes this first point, that his kingdom is not of this world, he makes his second point. Jesus came into the world to testify to the truth. What that means, quite simply, is that Jesus, whose kingdom originates not in this world, brings with him a message of truth into the world. And what is that message of truth? I dare say you could line up 100 ministers and ask them what the message was that Jesus brought into the world and get very nearly 100 different answers. Many would argue that the message of Jesus was that he himself was the one and only true Son of the living God, and that through his death and resurrection, people were now presented with the one and only way to receive God's grace. I will tell you, I do not believe that was the message Jesus brought into this world, although I would never deny that it is certainly the message of much of the church. Fred Craddock probably said it best: Jesus came preaching God, the church came preaching Jesus. Still, I do believe with all my heart that a repentant person who acknowledges his or her sins and prayerfully contemplates the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus can receive the mercy and grace of our loving Creator. I simply draw the line at saying that is the only way any human being can ever receive God's grace. Because I believe the truth Jesus testified to was indeed his assertion that the kingdom of God is among us and that we are born for the sole purpose of loving God and loving one another. That's it. I truly believe that is the only reason we exist. And I believe that is the truth Jesus brought into the world. Which leads us to the third point in today's passage. According to the Gospel of John, Jesus tells Pilate that persons of truth heed his voice. Persons of truth take to heart the things Jesus said. Now, assuming we all want to be persons of truth, we have to ask ourselves if we are taking seriously the things Jesus said. And I can only speak for myself when I admit that I often fall woefully short of heeding the voice of Jesus. I'm not going to stand here and beat myself up, but neither am I going to stand here and pretend I live every moment of my life faithfully heeding the voice of Jesus. For any of us to be a person of truth, according to today's Bible passage, we would probably have to be more willing to carry our crosses than we are. For example, Jesus told us to give to all who ask and not to let our left hand know what our right hand is doing. But we fall short. We want to make sure the people to whom we give deserve what we give them. I certainly recognize that trait in myself, and we can justify our thoughts in a million different ways, but we can't point to the words of Jesus to justify our thoughts. When somebody does us wrong, we want to get even, to teach them a lesson. Again, I recognize that trait in myself, but I can point to nothing in the teachings of Jesus to justify that trait. Jesus told us to love others as much as we love ourselves. But we don't. Let's not kid ourselves here. To put it in the first-person perspective, where it has the most power, most of us view the entire universe as consisting of two equal parts, me and everybody and everything else. There's a weird sort of balance there. And when push comes to shove, me is going to come out on top. You 6 billion others will just have to get in line and wait your turn. I mean, this is me we're talking about. And if we're honest with ourselves, that really is our perspective. We are, by nature, frighteningly self-centered creatures. Think about it. 6 billion people, 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy, and 100 billion galaxies beyond, a universe some 13 billion years old, and each of us thinks of himself or herself with our few decades here on planet Earth as the most important entity in the universe. We are very worldly creatures. We like to watch out for number one, or at best, number one and our immediate circle of family and friends. But we can be pulled out of our self-centered worlds. The most amazing thing about good storytellers is the way they can pull us into a movie or a novel or a play, and the way they can make the world go away and center us in a particular moment, in a particular situation. John does that to us with this little scene between Pilate and Jesus. His words confront us and demand a response. It is almost as if we are standing in Pilate's shoes. Because like Pilate, we've got our world pretty well figured out. We're comfortable. We're not hungry. We've got nice places to live. We've got a wonderful circle of family and friends. We've got a long list of reasons and justifications for living our lives just the way we do. Things are going just great, thank you. But now, thanks to John, we're standing toe to toe with Jesus. And Jesus says to us, the kingdom of God is not of this world. And then he says, I came into the world to testify to the truth. And then he says, persons of truth, heed my voice. And we listen and we get uncomfortable and we wish Jesus hadn't backed us into this corner with all this talk of truth, 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 truth. And suddenly we really are in the story, at least for a short time. And when we leave, when we finally walk away from the story, there are only two ways out. And we're forced to make a decision. We can follow Jesus, knowing that path and all that talk of truth led Jesus to the cross. Or we can follow Pilate and say, "What is truth?"